Hey, Stephen Stockwell here with you for Hack Today, filling in for Tom Tilley. And a whole bunch of you have been getting these really threatening phone calls.
Now, if we don't hear from you, we have to issue arrest warrant under your name and get you arrested. So get back to me as soon as possible.
Scammers are trying to scare you into handing over cash by pretending they're the tax office. Now, it's not legit, so don't do it, and we'll tell you where they're coming from. Also, the controversial Adani coal mine is going ahead. They're going to be funding it themselves, though, and we'll explain what that means and why that's a big deal.
We've fought hard for 50 years to have sufficient civil rights to have our human dignity accorded. It is not possible without proper recognition, and that's why I support the Voice to Power.
For more than 60,000 years, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have lived on this land. But the document that establishes Australia doesn't recognise that. Indigenous people have been calling for a greater say in how they're governed. And while that hasn't happened yet, it could be about to change. Just a couple of hours ago, the government committee dropped a report backing in an Indigenous voice, but leaving open how it would actually work. There's still some big questions, like whether this is actually going to change anything. So in a moment, we're going to talk to Labor Senator Pat Dodson, one of the chairs of this inquiry, to get some answers. First, though, here's Shalala Medora explaining how we got here.
Cast your mind back a few prime ministers ago. Tony Abbott promised to hold a referendum on whether Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people should be recognised in the Constitution.
Not them and us anymore. Just us.
So a committee was established to talk to Indigenous communities to see what they really wanted. In May last year, 250 delegates from First Nation peoples across the country converged on the Red Centre. This was a historic gathering that led to the Uluru Statement from the Heart.
In 2017, we seek to be heard.
It overwhelmingly rejected simple constitutional recognition as empty rhetoric.
While our children are languishing in the jails and our communities are so poverty-stricken, they've just wasted 10 years of a conversation and tens of millions of dollars.
Delegates to the Uluru Convention wanted the creation of a truth-telling commission and a voice to Parliament, an advisory body that was enshrined in the Constitution.
We want to be the author of our own destinies. We want to be the voice because we are tired of non-Indigenous Australia thinking they know what is good for us.
But the government rejected it outright, saying it would create a whole new arm of Parliament.
Having equal rights to sit in the Parliament is inconsistent with the principle of a third chamber.
It's no third
chamber. That's a real kick in the guts to the referendum council.
Labor and the Greens support the Uluru Statement.
But if we cannot work on this together, the next Labor government will instead look to legislate the voice to Parliament.
And many in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community won't give up the fight either.
We've fought hard for 50 years to have sufficient civil rights to have our human dignity accorded. It is not possible without proper recognition, and that's why I support the voice to Parliament.
Hack Triple J.
Professor Marcia Langdon speaking to Shalala Medora this morning. Now, this report has dropped. We know the idea of an Indigenous voice to Parliament is being taken a little bit more seriously than it has been in the past. Pat Dodson is a Labor Senator and the co-chair of the Joint Select Committee on Constitutional Recognition relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. And he joins us now from Parliament House. Pat, thanks for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me, and good day to all your listeners.
Does this report go far enough?
Probably doesn't, but it goes a long way from being kicked to the curb, brother.
And, I mean, one of the things in this, you're not committing to anything. There's a lot of, just, you know, is this, if you stop short of really making any difference?
No, this is a report to the Parliament. It calls for the next Parliament. We haven't got much left of this current one, subject to when the election's called. But the next Parliament is when the action is going to rev up and start. And that's really the commitments that Labor's committed to if we're voted into government, of course. These things really does depend on the government of the day picking it up, passing a bill to set up the question to be voted on by the public of Australia and to get a return from the majority of the states and the majority of the voters. So that's a matter for a government to do in collaboration with the people of Australia and certainly with the First Nations people.
I mean, we just heard in Shalala's story there where this has come from, how far we've come from a year ago from it pretty much just being a straight hard no on Indigenous Voice to Parliament to this report, which kind of backs it. I mean, how significant has this journey been?
Well, I think it's been very significant. We've come from, and I was back there in 30 years ago when Bob Hawke promised us a treaty at Barunga. And I've travelled down the road on a few other things since then, the expert panel and other things. So I can understand people's frustration with time and with the governments getting on and with politicians just talking about things and seeming to do nothing. I understand all of that. But this report actually brings us back into the parliament with the request that came out of Uluru for a voice to the parliament, for it to be entrenched in the legislation, for a truth-telling commission and for an agreement-making process. So this is all now put back into the parliament where the parliamentarians that get elected by the voters out there have got to make a commitment. So you've got some time to ask them what their commitments are going to be.
I mean, this has always been a conversation around constitutional recognition, enshrining, you know, the Indigenous people of Australia in Australia's founding document, the Commonwealth founding document, I should say. But in your report today, Chapter 3 is talking about legislative action, that we could have something that passes through the parliament. Does that set you up for an easy out if this conversation gets too hard?
No, it doesn't, because, see, one of the things they didn't do at Uluru was actually address those vestiges of the constitution that are there, like Section 5126, called the race power. And that was known that that power can be used adverse to the interest of the First Nations people. The people at Uluru decided that wasn't how they wanted to be recognised, and that's fair enough. But now, without without legislation that has a head of power that isn't reliant upon 5126, we don't have the purity of a standalone constitutional head of power that talks about setting up the voice. And that's the tension point between whether you embed that first or you go ahead and you legislate. The thing about legislation is there's no real capacity for the people in the regions, in the communities, to have a say over the affairs that affect their lives.
Pat, we've just had a text in here. It says the government should always consult the stakeholders who are impacted by policies, whether they be Indigenous or otherwise. Why should an Aboriginal person have any more representation in government than any other citizen?
Well, they won't be getting any more rights than any other citizen. That's the issue. All they'll be getting is an effective way to have their points of view put to the government in the same way as anyone else. BHP, you've heard about the corporate people, they all have their views, the bankers. You know, all of these people have their ways of getting their views across to government. The First Nations people have nothing different, except they have a structured way in which they're organised to come to the parliament, and it hasn't been defined at what points that interaction will take place, whether it is as it happens now, where sometimes they get to talk to the cabinet, talk to the Prime Minister or talk to the Minister or talk to a committee. So there's no special rights that go with this. It's a recognition of their uniqueness as the peoples, the first peoples of this country, who have a right to be heard in their own right, as opposed to being simply reliant upon the parties, like the party I am a party to, like the Labor Party or the Liberal Party or anyone else. I mean, they have a right. They have unique things they've got to say.
On the point of the party you're from, you're a member of the Labor Party, which is committed to having the Republic conversation in the first 100 days if you win the election next year. Does that mean you're putting that conversation about leaving the Commonwealth ahead of the discussion about constitutional recognition of Indigenous people of Australia?
No, it's not. We're fairly committed, and Bill Shorten's made this very clear, that we are committed as our first constitutional activity. It will be the embedment of the voice in the Constitution of Australia.
Then why would you make a statement about having that conversation about the Republic 100 days early and sort of putting that out there?
Well, I think we've also said we're going to have a conversation about most things in the first 100 days of a short and elected government. We're going to have it about youth. We're going to have it about the awful situation of out-of-home care that kids are in. We're going to have it about incarceration rates, you know, and about housing. So there's a whole range of things that we want to have the conversations about. And if you're in government, you actually have to do more than one thing at a time.
Absolutely. Pat Dodson, Labor Senator and co-chair of the Joint Select Committee on Constitutional Recognition relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Thank you for joining us from Parliament House.
Thank you for the opportunity and good luck to your listeners.
Hack.
We have quite a different way to view addictions compared to the traditional way.
Triple J.
If you're addicted to the pokies, you'd reckon a trip to the casino would be the last thing you'd want to do, right? Well, that's exactly where researchers want you to go, except in virtual reality. This new project is happening in Brain Park, a new research centre in Melbourne that's looking at ways you can treat addiction and OCD. The VR stuff is all about seeing how people cope in triggering environments. So we sent Jo Lauder down, gave her a headset, and pushed her into a dirty apartment in virtual reality.
So what's the idea? Is someone near me that can just explain this environment or...?
You start off with a relatively clean kitchen, and if you're fine with that, either you or the researcher or the clinician will start ramping up the contamination in the environment.
Right now, I've got a virtual reality headset on and I'm in a virtual apartment kitchen. At the moment, it's pretty tidy here. There are a few dishes stacked in the sink. But when I open the microwave, there's some food that's exploded and no one's wiped it up.
This annoys me more than I thought.
The kitchen starts getting way dirtier.
There's splattered food all over the splashback. Oh, yuck. There's lots of grime everywhere pretty much on the edge of, like, the cupboards, things like that.
This virtual reality room is one of the latest toys at Brain Park at Monash Uni. Brain Park is a groundbreaking research facility that's focusing on the latest neuroscience around addiction and looking at lifestyle and technology interventions to treat addiction. It looks nothing like a typical uni research centre. It's more like a fancy new gym or wellness facility with a sci-fi inspired VR room. Brain Park's deputy director, Dr. Rebecca Seagrave, says the virtual reality gives them a safe space to see how people respond to their triggers, and they put monitors on your body to see how you're going.
So much of addiction involves how we relate to the world and the decisions we make when we're out in the world. Virtual reality allows us to create very, very realistic but safe environments where people can practice their abilities to relate differently in the world and learn ways of relating differently in the world.
Professor Murat Yücel is the director of Brain Park.
We have quite a different way to view addictions compared to the traditional way.
Brain Park is focusing on compulsive behaviours such as obsessive compulsive disorder, gambling and alcoholism.
There's a quarter of the population or thereabouts that suffer some form of addiction, excessive habit, compulsion, symptoms of OCD, etc., where I guess a core element is this idea of a loss of control over your behaviour.
The researchers at Brain Park are interested in what drives people's addictive behaviours, what's going on in the brain that keeps them going back for more. And that can be different for different people who are addicted to the same thing.
You might be classified as someone with an alcohol use problem or a gambling disorder or someone with OCD. And a lot of those features are diagnosed on the basis of the outward behaviour, the symptom that presents that we
right,
can...
Right, like what you're addicted to.
Yeah, the behaviour, essentially. Whereas our view is we're trying to get a little bit more underneath that and go to the core driver and trigger of those behaviours.
And what we know from the latest neuroscience evidence is that for many people, there are commonalities, be it in as the reward system, as you mentioned, it might be the fear system, it might be the habit formation system. There can be commonalities in those brain systems and also the cognitive systems that are driving people's behaviours, even when the behaviour looks really different on the outside.
For example, people who are addicted to alcohol can go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there are specific programs for people with obsessive compulsive disorder. But even if they're addicted to different things, they might all be motivated by the anticipation of the reward. And that reward could be washing your hands, gambling, even having a bong. By looking under the hood, as Rebecca describes it, they can see what's motivating people.
We might see that both of our very different looking addictions are driven by really high reward sensitivity. So instead of those different treatments, we both need a treatment that's very focused on reward.
The team at Brain Park are researching 5 different interventions to help treat people, and none of these interventions are medication. As well as virtual reality, there's exercise and meditation, brain stimulation and cognitive training. Back in the VR room, PhD student Dan Marles is showing me how he's using a program that replicates a suburban RSL club pokies room to study poker machine design.
You might get 2 reels in a row and then the final one will sort of just tick over and you'll just miss out. And that kind of has an influence on the way that people make decisions to continue gambling.
Are you saying that's not a coincidence?
No, it's definitely not a coincidence.
Well, I guess up until now, like, unless your therapist came with you to the RSL, you'd have to be kind of, like, explaining what you were going through at that time.
Absolutely, and this allows us to do it in a way that's very independent, and we've got really, like, systematic control over not just the machines and how often someone's winning, but how many people are in their venue or the layout of where the machines are, and things like that can all be shifted and changed.
Dr. Rebecca Seagrave says the treatments that they're researching at Brain Park will hopefully bridge the gap between the research that's being done and the people who need it.
So all of the interventions here have been chosen specifically because they're things that we can really get out of Brain Park and across the community to be able to reach as many people as possible, and they offer affordable treatment options.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
That's Dr. Rebecca Seagrave speaking to Joe Lauder on the text line. Someone says, surely trying to treat some addictions in VR isn't going to work, like porn addictions, for instance. And yes, potentially that might not be ideal. You are listening to Hack on Triple J. My name is Stephen Stockwell, filling in for Tom Tilley.
Hack. The FBI has now categorised the Proud Boys as an extremist group with ties to white nationalism.
Triple J.
There's a dude coming to Australia in a couple of weeks who founded a group the FBI says is extremist. The guy is Gavin McGuinness. The group is the Proud Boys, a far-right group with ties to white nationalism. But the government has so far ignored calls to stop him coming in. Today, there was a petition with 81,000 signatures presented to federal parliament calling for the immigration minister to change his mind. We had something really interesting during that presentation as well, about people of colour being targeted by hate crimes.
They saw the impact of what happened when the far right was emboldened by politicians turning a blind eye and refusing to call them out.
That's Melanie Poole from the Federation of Community Legal Centres, who says Victorian Legal Aid Services saw a massive jump in the number of racist hate crimes over the last 12 months. In fact, she says they're up 50%.
We've had people turning up to our centres, young African Australians, young Indigenous Australians, other people of colour, having suffered horrifically violent injuries.
Don't worry, we'll keep in the loop about whether Gavin McGuinness ends up being allowed into the country as well.
Hack. Indian energy giant Adani has announced its Carmichael mine in central Queensland will go ahead.
On Triple J.
It's been called a carbon bomb by its critics, but after 8 years of legal fights and heated political discussion, Adani's Carmichael coal mine in Queensland is going ahead, albeit a fun-sized version. It's had the government's backing for a while, but it couldn't find anyone willing to back it financially. Now, that hasn't changed, but the Sabo Adani said it would fund a smaller version of the mine itself and that it's ready to start construction. To find out what this means, why Adani's had to pony up the coin itself, we're joined by Tim Buckley, the Director of Energy Finance Studies Australia. Tim, thank you for joining us on Hack.
Good afternoon, Stephen.
How much smaller is this mine than the one that Adani originally proposed?
It is tiny by comparison to the original proposal. Originally, they were talking 60 million tonnes per annum for 60 to 90 years. Now they're talking, they haven't actually identified it, but they've said it's materially less than 10 million tonnes per annum for 30 years. It's a fraction of the size, but it's also part of a desperate strategy to get the thin edge of the wedge in place before their approvals get removed.
Does the fact that no one wanted to lend Adani money for this program show that maybe coal mines aren't a great idea?
I think that's absolutely key. The point you're making is that they've announced today through a two-page press release that they're having to fund it themselves because no one else will go near this project. It is a toxic climate bomb, and it's coming at a time when the UN... IPCC has made it absolutely clear that the world can't afford new thermal coal mines. What does Adani want to build? Yet another new thermal coal mine of really low quality. The International Energy Agency says the market for seaborne thermal coal is going to drop by two-thirds in the next two decades if the world's to deal with climate change. So this mine is not needed. It is toxic for the climate. And the irony of Adani announcing this internal decision today at a time when Queensland's being smashed by extreme weather events absolutely related to climate change. I mean, the irony of that is unbelievable. And then they said, oh, they couldn't get a response from the Queensland government. Well, that's because the Queensland government's got pressing out-of-control bushfires and extreme heat waves going through the north of Queensland at the moment. That's not surprising they're not available.
I mean, you're making that link between the damage this is going to do to the environment, but this is a much smaller mine than the one they pitched to start with. So surely this is, you know, less harmful to the environment. You know, this used to be described as a carbon, you know, by its critics as a carbon bomb, but this seems to be maybe just a smaller carbon grenade potentially.
Yeah, it's only 20 million tonnes per annum of carbon pollution for 30 years, so it's 600 million tonnes of carbon pollution. That's quite a bit by global standards, but you're right, it's a fraction of what they originally proposed, but that is the problem. They are announcing this stage one. They get stage one built, then they will announce stage two. They'll move it up to 27 million tonnes per annum. Mac Mines this week got approved by the Queensland government to build a 38 million tonne per annum mine right next door using all the infrastructure that Adani is proposing to build, and soon you'll have 10 projects of 300 million tonnes per annum, which is 600 or 800 million tonnes a year of carbon emissions, which is enough to destroy the planet.
I'd love to know what you guys think about this. You're listening to Hack on Triple J. Send me a text 0439 757 555. We're joined by Tim Buckley, the Director of Energy Finance Studies Australia, and we're talking about the Adani coal mine in Queensland, which today it announced it would be funding itself. Now, Tim, you know, this is, you know, in the scheme of mines in Australia, about, you know, it's not a huge one, but what does it mean for the basin in that area? Is this actually quite a significant moment that this is happening at all?
Well, should they proceed? Now, at the end of the day, they hit the green button 18 months ago and said they were going to do this, and they've hit the green button again today and said they're almost ready to start. But the key point you made is absolutely spot on. No one is willing to work with them. No one will partner with them. And the reason for that is very, very clear. The world cannot afford this project because you build this mine, you then enable the mine to be doubled in size, trebled in size, and then you enable another nine. And that is something that the world can't afford, and that is something the community has repeatedly voted on to our politicians. I mean, the whole Victorian election was all about climate change. The Wentworth by-election was largely about climate change. The electorate is making it very clear our politicians need to act, and I think that is what is at the centre of today's decision to internally finance it, because they know that there's a short window of opportunity. The Adani Australia management is desperate to get under construction before we get a change of government, so before they lose their approvals.
Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks for your time.
Tim Buckley, the Director of Energy Finance Studies Australia. And on the text line, Anthony from Melbourne says, wouldn't need a new coal mine if nuclear power was used. That would solve the climate issue. Another texter says, coal mines have had their day and it's shit, yet it's allowed to happen. Someone else says, if the mine isn't needed and coal gets phased out, then let them build it and let natural commercial forces send them broke. Another person says, I don't want a fun-sized version of the mine either. Is there anything we can do to stop this?
Someone should look into that.
Hack investigates.
If someone called you and said they were going to issue a warrant for your arrest if you didn't call them back, what would you do? Heaps of people are getting these messages at the moment, people saying they're from the tax office. They're all a bit different, but they say you owe them money, and if you don't call them back, shit will get kind of real.
Now if we don't hear from you, we have to issue arrest warrant under your name and get you arrested, so get back to me as soon as possible.
It's a pretty heavy threat, and that one specifically was left on Avani Dias's voicemail, and she wanted to know where they were coming from. Av joins me in the studio now. How many of these have you had?
Look, Stocky, I don't know what it is about me, but I seem to always get weird scammers trying to approach me. It's happened all year in different kind of forms, but this specific tax scam call, I've had about four over the last few months. The first one I got, it was actually after I'd just done my tax return and I've switched to a new accountant, and I was like, oh God, this is it. Like, they're going to arrest me. This guy's some kind of, you know, corrupt criminal, and you know, the scammers have got me. But the thing that they do is they've got a robotic voice, as you just heard then, and they basically try and tell you you're going to get arrested if you don't call them. Sometimes they say they're from the ATO, the tax office, or they say they're from a government department, and they give you this number being like, if you don't call us back, something will happen.
Yeah, right. I'd love to know if you guys have experienced this as well. Give me a call, 1300 055 536, or send me a text, 0439 757 555. Rob from Byron says, I'm totally convinced that a generic software voice is the tax office. I think he's being sarcastic. I can't tell. It doesn't come across very well on the text line. And someone else saying, I had a call claiming to be the tax department a couple of weeks ago. I knew it was a scam, but what they threw me was the 02 number and Canberra location. So that's obviously kind of, you know, getting into people. How big a thing is this, Av?
Yeah, well, that's really interesting what that person just said, because what these scammers do, they're actually overseas organised crime groups, and they get what's called a spoof number, which basically makes it look like it's an Australian number. So they're all like Melbourne or Sydney based. And so you think, oh yeah, this is probably coming from Australia. And when I raise this, other members of the Hack team have received calls too. So it's pretty widespread. So I wanted to kind of look into this because there's not heaps of information out there on what's going on. So the Australian Consumer and Competition Commission has a scam watch department, and they've been looking into this. They actually said that they've received what they called a tsunami of complaints about this. Last week, they received 1,000 complaints on this, and they said the majority of people don't actually even complain and actually phone in and tell people that something's going on. So I wanted to call this number to be like, you know, who are these people? Where are they coming from? And it was a pretty weird phone call, Stocky.
You have reached the taxation department. How can I help you?
Hi, I just received a missed call from this number and they left a voicemail for me. Just wondering who it is.
Can I have your cell phone number?
What
number you received?
I'm just wondering what the call's about, because it said that I've committed some kind of fraud or something.
Yes. Can you call me back with your number, please?
No, I just want to know what's happening here.
This is regarding the tax report, okay? Regarding your tax filing.
What's the issue? Yeah, so he just kind of hung up on me, which was a bit weird. But
it's not very polite.
I know, it's pretty rude. But the thing is that they were doing two things. Firstly, they answered pretending to be the tax office. And the other thing was that they were trying to get my phone number, which was interesting.
Yeah, so we've got Tim who's given us a call from Canberra. Tim, you got one of these calls.
Yeah, hi. I had one of these. It came from what was a number coming out of Melbourne, and it was the same sort of thing, saying up from the ATO, and if I didn't call them back, they'd issue an arrest warrant.
Yeah, right. This is exactly like the same sort of thing that's going on here. Av, what do these people want?
Well, they want two things, and the eventual outcome is money, obviously. Firstly, they'll do a thing where they say, you know, we're from the tax office and you haven't paid your taxes properly, and if you don't do it, we'll put out a warrant for your arrest. And then they say, you must pay today and don't tell anyone about this call. If you pay today, then this whole thing will go away. You'll be scot-free. You won't be charged with anything and it'll all be fine. And then they tell you to go to a Bitcoin ATM and put in all the money so they can access it.
That seems and super.
It's super dodgy. And then what they were trying to do on this call with me was they were trying to get my phone number, and they try and get your personal details so they can find out a bit more about you and access your bank account that way.
Yeah, right. And I mean, we're starting to run out of time. We'll be heading into to good nights pretty soon. You know, who's behind this?
Well, it's organised crime groups. They're overseas. But the kind of scary thing about this, Stocky, is that the people investigating this say it's pretty hard to shut these down. They're international syndicates. They're overseas. And the thing is, these scammers are getting more and more sophisticated. These calls are getting more scary. And this is what Delia Rickard from the ACCC had to say.
Scammers are getting better and better all the time. Authorities from time to time manage to close down whole call centres overseas, and we see a slight drop in numbers for a while, but they start up again somewhere else.
Interesting stuff, Av. We should just totally ignore this stuff, you reckon?
I think so. The advice is to just hang up, do not call them back, and just ignore it completely.
Yeah, right. And so if I get one of these calls and I ignore it completely and you know, I get sent to jail, you'll be around to post me bail, right?
Look, Stocky, I feel like we've gone through this, and if you still do it, look, it's not on me anymore. It's all your fault, so no.
Hack.
On Triple J.
Super weird, right? Overseas criminal gangs pretending to be the tax office? It's all part of Hack Investigates, and if there's something you want us to suss out, give us a call. Hit us up on the Facebook page or send us an email, hack@abc.net.au. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I'll be back in your ears tomorrow.